Welcome to the Illinois World Labor Hour. The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated. Well, folks, this is another edition of the Illinois World Labor Hour, which is being broadcast from downtown Champaign on 90.1 FM and webcast worldwide at www.weft.org. Well, there's been a lot of. We were off last week, and Tom and, or I should say, I was. Tom and Bob held down the fort. I was at the Unity March here in Champaign. Pretty good turnout, and we'll be talking about that in a future show. Because, well, we'll go into that at that time. We don't want to get that on the air because we've got a lot on the show today. We got a very special guest from DeKalb, Illinois. His name is Dan Kenny, and he's going to be talking about Blackwater. So, with no further ado, Tom.
The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois.
Okay. Well, there's been a lot going on in the news, and before we get to our guest here, we're going to be talking about a few news stories. And hey, folks, what do you think about that big bailout? Democracy in action, huh? I've been hearing stories about people calling their representatives 300-1 against the bailout. And guess what? It passed. So we're going to be talking about
that. It passed twice.
Yeah, well, it actually failed once, then passed in the Senate, and then it went back to the House and finally passed. But anyway, Tom?
Hey, the Ford Motor Company purchased the car brand Volvo in March of 1999, and it appears to be becoming not the wisest investment. Volvo has tripled its planned job cuts to 6,000 positions, or 25% of its workforce, citing a rapidly deteriorating worldwide auto market. According to Stephen Odell, Volvo's chief executive, the unstable economic environment has resulted in a very unpredictable situation, and the downturn in the global car industry is much more drastic than expected. Earnings for this year's second half at Volvo will be worse than in the first 6 months, reversing a prior forecast for improvement in the market. The Swedish unit had a pre-tax loss of $271 million in the first half of 2008. Volvo said the positions being eliminated included regular employees and consultants. Volvo has 24,300 employees, and the job cuts are part of a plan to lower expenses for the company by over $500 million. New members of the European Union in Central and Eastern Europe have so far avoided much of the upheaval caused by the crises of confidence in the global financial systems. Although consumer spending is falling and growth rates are declining in the Czech Republic, Poland, Slovakia, Slovenia, and particularly in Estonia, analysts say the trends are not related to the banking turmoil spreading across the continent, said Eric Bergloff, chief economist of the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development. It is remarkable how little impact the world crisis has had on the region as a whole. The bank was established in 1991 after the collapse of the communist system to help countries in Eastern and Central Europe make the transition to market economies. The European Bank for Reconstruction and Development has estimated that growth across Central and Eastern Europe this year will average 4.7%, a stark contrast 5.9% last year. The bank said the slowdown reflects anti-inflationary tightening of monetary policies and an expected decline in exports. New Orleans officials have agreed to return several hundred firearms that police confiscated in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, part of a deal to resolve a lawsuit filed by gun lobbying groups. The settlement agreement, filed Tuesday, October 7th in federal court, calls for the groups, the National Rifle Association and the Second Amendment Foundation, to drop their case if the city follows a plan for returning guns to owners who had them seized by police after the August 29th, 2005 hurricane. The U.S. Supreme Court recently ruled on a Washington, D.C. city ordinance that the amendment protects private ownership of handguns, not just the arsenals of state militias. A New Orleans police spokesman, Bob Young, said the department had stored 552 guns that were confiscated after Hurricane Katrina through December 31st of 2005. The police have said that most of the confiscated firearms had been stolen or found abandoned in homes, but the NRA claims the police unnecessarily disarmed some people who were simply trying to flee the city in the storm. A little closer to home, Cook County Sheriff Thomas J. Dart announced Wednesday that law enforcement officers in Chicago will no longer evict residents from foreclosed properties. According to Sheriff Dart, his department will have conducted some 4,700 foreclosures by the end of the year, which is triple the number from 2 years ago. Housing advocates said that they thought the measure was the first of its kind, but in recent years, several sheriffs and judges around the country had taken other steps to slow foreclosure proceedings, like requiring lenders to produce titles proving that they actually own the properties in question. In Philadelphia this year, Sheriff John D. Green temporarily suspended sales of foreclosed properties. Sheriff Dart in Chicago said he took his measure because an increasing number of residents being evicted were renters who were dutifully paying their rent and might have had no knowledge that the owner was being foreclosed. Families in foreclosed properties were often not even notified that they would have to leave and were not given any kind of grace period to relocate. Sometimes their first sign of trouble was the appearance of deputies at the door demanding that they leave immediately. Under a new Chicago law, staunchly supported by Sheriff Dart, renters are entitled to a 90-day grace period starting at the time a foreclosure sale is confirmed before they can be evicted. And finally, according to campaign strategists and other analysts, the economic upheaval our nation is suffering is threatening to topple Republican congressional candidates, putting more Senate and House seats within reach of the Democratic candidates less than a month before the elections. Top campaign officials for both parties and various pollsters and independent experts say the intense focus on our economic turmoil and the recent bailout votes have combined to rapidly expand a Democratic advantage in congressional contests. Analysts are now predicting a Democratic surge on a scale that seemed unlikely just weeks ago. Many Republicans in traditional strongholds are fighting for their political careers, and Democratic leaders are looking forward to ironclad majorities. Democrats say they are feeling confidently ahead in at least 5 Senate races where they hope to capture Republican seats, and they believe their candidates are running competitively in at least 7 more. In the House of Representatives, Democrats feel they can capture a dozen or more seats left open by retirements, and challengers are closing in numerous precincts around the nation. I'm Tom Thomas, and this has been your Laborers World News Report for October 11th, 2008, brought to you on the Illinois World Labor Hour on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, community radio for East Central Illinois. Thank you for listening.
Okay, that was James McMurtry. The name of the song is God Bless America, and it's I thought it would be a very appropriate song to play considering the guest we have in the studio today. And the guest we have is named Dan Kenny. He's a historian and teacher at DeKalb, Illinois. He's a member of the American Federation of Teachers and the Interfaith Network and anti-war group Clearwater, a group opposed to Blackwater, the world's largest private military security contractor. Dan came into town the other day. He spoke on Friday at noon over on the U of I campus, and then last night at the Urbana City Council chambers at 7 p.m. And his speech was his tour here, I guess you'd call it. was co-sponsored by the anti-war and racism effort, Channing Murray, Industrial Workers of the World, Jobs of Justice, Socialist Forum, and UC Friends Meeting, or otherwise known as the Quakers. And a little statement here about Dan's talk is, we are in an emergency of privatization with the bailout of Wall Street at the expense of American taxpayers. The fear tactics of emergency being used now to Russia's economic gift plan sound familiar because they are similar to the selling of the Iraq War. This is just the latest and perhaps most blatant example of privatization. Private profits being supported and maintained by public money. Where can we go from here to change this path? So with that, Dan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me on. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. Well, why don't you talk a little bit about, first of all, why you're kind of going on a little speaking tour, if you will, about this issue and how you got interested in this whole thing about privatization, in particular with the private military contractor Blackwater.
I first got involved in it as I'm the co-coordinator, as you mentioned, of the DeKalb Interfaith Network for Peace and Justice, which is the DeKalb Peace and Justice group, similar to your AWARE group that you have here in Champaign. We also have a Northern Illinois coalition of peace and justice groups that's been in existence for several years. And we decided as a group we wanted to focus on war profiteers. And as it happened in November of 06, I saw an article in the Rockford paper about Blackwater coming into northwest Illinois to Joe Davies County to open up a training facility there. And so we thought there wouldn't be a better, more important profit-making company to focus on in relation to the war than Blackwater. So we decided to focus on Blackwater as our war profiteer that we wanted to try to do something about to stop. And so at that time, I started to do some research into Blackwater, and because I didn't know anything about them at the time. And this was before, of course, the shootings in Nisour Square and before they had a lot of national attention for some of the atrocities that they've been a part of. But at that time, as I started to go down the journey of trying to find out more about them, I found out that they're part of a much bigger picture of privatization and how basically we're turning over our security to private companies. And pretty soon, one of the things that the head of the UN Working Group on Mercenaries, studying the use of mercenaries around the world, said is we're turning our world into a world of green zones where security will no longer be a right but a privilege for the wealthy.
Now, of course, Blackwater has been getting a lot of attention, at least in the alternative media, Democracy Now!, Link TV, and some of the radio stations, of course, around the country. Jeremy Scahill, of course, has done, he wrote a book about Blackwater, and he's been, of course, talking on a lot of talk shows and stuff. But a lot of people may ask, okay, what's this have to do with labor and stuff? So could you talk a little about what kind of maybe what Blackwater has done when they were in Iraq? Or sure. Still are in Iraq, actually, yes.
Right, yeah, there's over 1,000 contractors from Blackwater in Iraq. But, of course, there's over 180,000 private contractors working in Iraq. Not all of them are military or security contractors. There's 45 to 47,000 military contractors. But the contractors that are over in Iraq are all working for private companies or private corporations, and they're making as much. Private military contractors, for instance, like Blackwater, make as much in 1 month as our U.S. soldiers make in an entire year. And so there's that issue of not equity in terms of pay, in terms of the treatment. Also, the issue of the fact that they go to other countries to recruit workers, former soldiers, to work for them from Colombia, Chile. Pinochet, former soldiers, have been part of Blackwater. And they
one of South Africa as well, too, right?
Yeah, well, yes, right, all over the world, yes. Mm-hmm.
So basically, it's interesting how they've been doing a lot of recruiting these countries that formerly had military dictatorships or repressive governments.
That's right. And one of the things that was interesting in terms of labor is that when they recruited soldiers from Colombia, former soldiers, and sent them to Iraq, once they got over there, the Colombian soldiers realized they weren't getting paid as much as the American contractors. And so they decided they were going to have a, try to organize themselves and try to demand more pay from Blackwater. Of course, Blackwater responded by shipping them back to Colombia.
What a nice employer. I know that right after the invasion of Iraq, we covered some stories here on the air about, first of all, the only law left on the book from the Saddam Hussein era was the one banning unions, and also that I believe it was Halliburton imported a good number of workers from well, various countries, in particular Bangladesh, to work on the docks and some other places in Iraq, basically undercutting the Iraqi workers. And it's interesting, too, about a lot of the stories we've been covering here over the last several years on the air about the repression against workers in general in Iraq who tried to do collective actions, peaceful collective actions, and union headquarters, when they formed unions, even despite the Paul Brenner's ban, a lot of these union headquarters were raided, the leaders beaten up and arrested, the offices ransacked and vandalized, and you know, it's interesting. I wonder how much Blackwater is involved in that. And the reason I'm asking this, what I'm leading up to here, is could you talk a little bit about Blackwater's role in, because a lot of people might think, well, that's over there, that doesn't affect us here. Could you talk a little bit about Blackwater's role in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina?
Yeah, so that's interesting. After Hurricane Katrina and after the levees broke, Blackwater went down there uninvited. And once they got there, within a couple of days, they said they went there to help out. But of course, within a couple of days, they had a contract with FEMA to provide security, supposedly. And of course, it was security for the businesses and not for the everyday citizen. And one of the photographs that's been spread around widely is of Blackwater walking down the street with assault rifles in their hands and so on, and they didn't look like they were there to provide any security for the citizens. If anything, they were threatening to the citizens. After they were there and got this contract, they were charging the taxpayers $900 and some for every contractor that was down there, while they were paying the contractors $300 a day.
Per day, okay.
Per day, mm-hmm, yes. Mm-hmm. And so they ended up making it as much as $250,000 a week while they were under this, from taxpayer money while they were down there. Also, there was a lot of reports of assaults or abuses by Blackwater contractors on everyday citizens down there, and that's one of the things the UN mercenary group, or working group studying the use of mercenaries, is also investigating those claims of assault by Blackwater employees. And the other thing about this is that's kind of scary, is that they also were deputized by the New Orleans County Sheriff's Department, and that I think is extremely disturbing, because we don't know for sure, like in Minneapolis recently with the Republican convention, how many of those police officers were actually police officers or if they were deputized. The FBI was involved, as we know, up there in Minneapolis, and so that could become a pattern. One of the things Blackwater wants to do is become more involved in the domestic, when a domestic disturbance happens or when a terrorist event occurs, they want to be on the ready. They have as many as 25,000 names in a database that they say they can call up in a moment's notice to deploy to wherever they're needed.
So are deputized permanently?
No, not permanently. No, temporarily. But they could be deputized in a moment's notice, you know what I mean, if something happened and they felt they needed them.
Basically.
Yeah, right. If they felt they needed to be deputized, you know, that would be... You know, and so you have basically a private army. This in particular, Blackwater, there's hundreds of private military companies and there's hundreds of private security. It's one of the fastest growing industries in terms of hiring people all around the world. You mentioned South Africa earlier. It's one of the main employers in South Africa. It's private security I'm talking about. And so, and some of the companies are so small, they operate out of a briefcase. They don't even have an office or anything. Some of them are large. So it becomes disturbing, because you don't when you see how they're trained and the fact that they're working with former soldiers of Pinochet and things like that, it becomes very threatening to the civilian population.
Well, of course, it's been well documented about some of the abuses that Blackwater have committed in Iraq, and have gotten basically not been held accountable whatsoever. That mostly they fall into that they're not subject to you know, American law or any other law. Which makes me wonder if you heard anything about those complaints filed in New Orleans. Were any Blackwater people brought to court?
No, none of them are brought to court that I've heard of.
I'm seeing a pattern here, and I don't like it.
Exactly.
I don't like it at all.
The whole issue of lack of accountability is huge, and that's a big part of it also.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we're going to play a little Workers Independent News, and then we'll be right back with some more from our guest today, Dan Kinney.
Spread support in their fight for a good contract.
Nearly every union out here is doing whatever they can do to support us, whether it's coming and putting time in on the picket line, bringing by coffee, donuts, a bag of groceries, or financial support. They are there with us. They support us. They know that your fight is what makes the labor community strong, and they will benefit from your fight.
Workers so far this year in America have been hit with a total jobs loss of 760,000. Organized labor is calling for direct relief to the millions of families being squeezed hard by the economy and the lack of good jobs. According to the National Employment Law Project, 750,000 workers this year will exhaust their unemployment benefits without finding new jobs. Should everyone have a pension? That's what one economics professor is suggesting in her new book. Jesse Russell reports.
New School for Social Research economics professor Teresa Ghilarducci wants you to have a pension. According to Ghilarducci, only 50% of the workforce have anything dedicated to pensions. In her book, When I'm 64, The Plot Against Pensions and the Plan to Save Them, she proposes that everyone who doesn't currently have a defined benefit be allowed to put 5% of pay into a government-guaranteed secure account,
where they would accumulate assets, and at the end of their working life, when they collect Social Security, will get a supplement to Social Security on top of their Social Security. And if they want to save more, they can add to it, and they won't have to go to a commercial bank or in a commercial investment house.
Ghilarducci has seen a shift in the political climate regarding her plan, which was marginalized before the summer, but is now receiving more support with the current financial crisis.
This way, we give everybody access to the kinds of plans that public sector workers have, Federal Reserve employees have, federal government employees have, members of Congress, state legislatures, and the lucky unionists who have a defined benefit plan at work.
Here is today's economic report. More than 40 years since the start of the war on poverty, how is the U.S. doing? Not very well, according to a recent survey of mayors across the country. The poverty rate in the U.S. is currently 12.3%. In 1967, that rate was 14.2%. The federal government currently considers a family of three with an income of less than $17,170 as being in poverty. But 30% of the mayors said a family of that size really needs at least $30,000 a year.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org. You're listening.
Okay, we're back, folks, and we got our guest here, Dan Kinney. But first, we'd like to play, Tom Thomas will recite the poem of the week. And this week's poem is Our Children Deserve.
Our children deserve tomorrow as a promise and not a fear. They do not deserve the sorrow of recent years visited here. We must build a society where democracy can function. Our kids deserve a land that's free with a lack of all compunction. What will we teach our kids today when there's so very much to learn? How about that today's the day when fortunes can begin to turn? They deserve to have free health care, as it should have been all along. To not have to fight anywhere, because they'll know that warfare's wrong. Our kids deserve to see the day with a social sun shining bright, with bloody wars all gone away, and futures where they'll know not fright. But no one can do it alone. In unity and brotherhood, we can draw the sword from the stone and together stand for what's good. Our children deserve tomorrow as a promise and not a fear. They do not deserve the sorrow of recent years visited here. Written at the Poets Loft in Champaign, Illinois on October 9th, 2008, which was my granddaughter's birthday, by the way. She's 10 years old. Our Children Deserve was first recited live on the Illinois World Labor Hour, October 11th, 2008, on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, community radio for East Central Illinois.
Okay, we have a few community public service announcements. First of all, the Central Illinois Industrial Workers of the World will be meeting today at 1 p.m. at the downtown Urbana Post Office, 202 South Broadway, in the basement family room. Entrance on the Elm Street exit. All workers are welcome. Also, Naomi Klein is going to be coming to Champaign-Urbana on October 29th. She'll be speaking at Smith Music Hall at 7:30 p.m. That's October 29th. 7:30 p.m. at Smith Music Hall. I highly recommend everybody turn out. Naomi Klein's recent book, The Shock Doctrine, and her previous film, The Take, are just excellent. One is a brilliant analysis of what's been going on, the whole tactics, if you will, of the neoliberal, neoconservative agenda throughout the world. Turnout. It's definitely worth it. I've seen Naomi Klein speak when she's been here before, and it's definitely very, very informative. And last but not least, we recently had a unity march here in Champaign-Urbana, and we're going to be talking more about the upcoming township referendum on future shows, so please stay tuned.
I've been waiting for something to happen, for a week or a month or a year, with the blood in the ink of the headlines and the sound of the crowd in my ear. You might ask what it takes to remember when you know that you've seen it before, where a government lies to a people and a country is drifting to war. And there's a shadow on the faces of the men who send their guns to the wars that are fought in places where the business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, on TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone, and their lives in the balance. There are people under fire, there are children at the cannons, and there is blood on the wire. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who fanned the flames of the wars that are fought in places we can't even say the names. They sell us the president the same way they sell us our clothes and our cars. They sell us everything from youth to religion, the same time they sell us our wars. I wanna know who the men are, shadows are. I want to hear somebody asking them why. It can be counted on to tell us who our enemies are, but they're never the ones to fight or to die. And there are lives in the balance. There are people under fire, there are children at the cannons, and there is blood on the wire. And there are lives in the balance, people under fire, children at the cannons. There are.
Okay, we're back with our special guest, Dan Kinney, and talking about Blackwater and its threats to both, to democracy and to us as citizens, and especially us as labor people or any other type of citizen who maybe wants to express their opinions, either in a public protest or whatever. This is really frightening stuff. And, we were talking about right before the little poem and the musical break there about some of the things Blackwater has done in this country with New Orleans and stuff. This is pretty frightening. I mean, the thing is that basically you've got a privatized entity that is basically, from what I've seen, they're accountable to no one except the company they work for. Can you talk a little bit more about this? I mean, as far as, what about the person that owns this place? I mean, the owner of Blackwater, is his name Prince, his last name?
Yes, Eric Prince.
Eric Prince, uh-huh.
Yes, and he's the sole owner of Blackwater. Blackwater is different than some of the other private companies because it's totally private. It's not on the stock exchange, so they don't have to reveal a lot of the information. They don't have to file with FCC any mm-hmm. information, things like that. And so he's been a big bankroller of the Republicans over the years. He and his entire family have bankrolled neoconservative causes, right-wing conservative causes over the years.
Mm-hmm. So you basically have a private army that's accountable to no one that also has a political agenda.
Right. And he's one of the few private individuals that has a CIA badge that allows him in any CIA facility around the world. And he's located his home in McLean County, McLean, Virginia, which is right outside Washington, D.C. And, for instance, he just recently purchased two bombers from Brazil. They have armored vehicles that they manufacture themselves. They have their own surveillance blimp, and so on. And so basically he's put together this private army of his own, and he's probably the only person in the United States that has such a large stockpile of ammunition, weapons, and so on. And as I mentioned earlier, it's 25,000, a database of at least 25,000 people that he can call up or his contractors to call up and deploy anywhere he wants. So basically he's set up this, as Jeremy Scales referred to as the shadow army. And as you mentioned, and there's many examples of lack of accountability. For example, after the Nisour Square shooting in Baghdad, when 17 civilians were innocent civilians were killed, some of them even shot in the back as they were trying to flee the area. The Blackwater employees involved in that have not experienced any consequences, have not been indicted, have not had any accountability for that shooting, partly because of Order 17 that Paul Bremer signed before he left Baghdad, which basically provided immunity for all private contractors working in Iraq. And we know that even a month after the shooting, one of the contractors involved in the shooting was at a tailgating party at a football, Texas A&M football game, just going on with their lives, even though they've been involved in these murders and slaughter.
That's pretty horrible. And as horrible as that is, you said that no Blackwater employees were ever questioned even or brought to court over the assaults they committed on citizens of New Orleans.
Well, I want to clarify, they were questioned.
They were questioned,
in the investigation, but what they were told, most people when you get arrested in the United States, you're told whatever you say can be held against you. Mm-hmm. What they were told is whatever you say will not be held against you. They were given immunity before they were questioned.
Me?
They were told that whatever they said in the investigation, the answer to the questions would not, whatever they said, would not be held against them in a court of law.
You know, I've been following this on and off for a while now, but, you know, I'm really glad that you came to town here and you were able to stop in here on the Labor Hour because this is even more frightening than I thought. I mean, this is, for all practical purposes, this is another Praetorian Guard. I mean, basically, that this is a private army. I mean, you're saying that they've bought a couple bombers from Brazil, so they're not just a bunch of guys running around flapjacks and assault rifles. We're talking air support now.
Yes,
in some way.
And they have their own presidential airlines, where they provide flight support for the military in different ways, and they also provide flight support for different countries. They have their own another company that they've set up offshore called Greystone Limited, which is set up in Barbados, and that company was organized offshore because Blackwater makes a big point out of not being a mercenary group because they say they only work for one government. They only work for the United States government. But Greystone, their subsidiary that's offshore, works for all different countries, whatever country calls them in, they work for. But on the local level, another concern that we have here in Illinois is the fact that they're training our local police. They've offered free training to the local police in Joe Davies County to try to build up good PR for themselves. But they also have police officers coming in from all over the United States. One of the people that I interviewed said that they had police officers that came in from California to be trained at the Joe Davies site. And so the issue of this company who has this kind of history and this kind of past doing the training of
and
their
the
own
political
police,
agenda plus
right in the political agenda exactly and training the police is a doubly frightening, I think, in terms of our own citizens in this state. If you take the example again of we mentioned of the Republican convention and how some of the police officers, how they treated the protesters in terms of abuse of the protesters and lack of concern for, let's say, civil law, I guess you'd say, that's a pattern that we've seen with Blackwater and other private. It's not just Blackwater, also Triple Canopy and other companies have been investigated for shooting civilians in Iraq and so on.
Now, some people might think that New Orleans after Katrina, when Blackwater went down, that was an anomaly. But when I was talking to you in our musical break, you mentioned that there's been suspicion that at these protests, like the DNC and RNC recently, and even going as far back as the FTTA protest in Miami in 2002, that the riot police that were there weren't the local police at all, even though they were wearing their uniform, their riot gear and stuff. Do you have any evidence that Blackwater has already maybe been involved in various domestic activities against U.S. citizens or anyone living in this country for that matter?
One example we have is a photograph from the raid at the factory in Postville, Iowa, when they rounded up, I think it was 300 immigrants that were working in that factory. And the photograph shows one of the ICE agents was wearing a Blackwater T-shirt. And whether he was actually a black... Well, one of the things about having independent contractors, like Blackwater, an employee of Blackwater or a contractor that's on their database that can be called up by Blackwater, can also be called up by other agencies of the government. So they can be connected to Blackwater, but yet do a raid for ICE when they need extra personnel to do a raid, and then go back to being a contractor for Blackwater. And that crossover between the private and the and public like that is very disconcerting.
Well, this is quite disturbing. Now, they were going to open up a facility out in San Diego, if I'm not mistaken, and the citizens there, were they able to prevent that from happening? Entirely,
well,
I should say?
Right. And they wanted to open up wanted to take over an 800-acre abandoned chicken ranch in near Potrero, California, which was a few miles from the Mexican border. And once and the county board had approved it, but once the citizens found out about it, once it was brought to their attention, they demanded a recall election of those board members who had approved it, and they were able to defeat those members during the December election. So a month later, Blackwater said, well, they had changed their business plans anyway, and they withdrew their application for a permit for a training facility there. But what people didn't realize is that by another name, that when you look at the list of names associated with Blackwater, company names associated with Blackwater, it's a very long list, numbering about 20 different names of different companies that they have. So one of these other companies by a different name leased a 60,000-square-foot warehouse about two blocks from the border with Mexico and opened up a training facility there where some of our U.S. Navy personnel is being trained right now.
Oh, this is quite interesting.
And one of the issues about the border, one of the reasons they want to be near the border is they want to get involved. There's Boeing, Lockheed Martin, and so on are going to get millions of dollars of taxpayer money to provide border protection, and Blackwater's hoping to cash in on some of that money.
This training facility you mentioned in Virginia, is it in any very close proximity to the School of the Americas?
Oh, actually, it's in North Carolina, the training facility is. It's not real close to Fort Benning, but... The School of Americas is an interesting tie because when I went, I spoke down there last year at the vigil, and one of the concerns that many of us have, of course, is that the next School of Americas will be a company like Blackwater. It already is. I mean, you look at the torture that took place in Abu Ghraib; that was outsourced to CACI, which is another private military company.
Yeah, I've heard of CACI.
Yeah, and they've done that. They've been doing the torture for so it's you know. It's a large concern, yes.
Well, this is quite an interesting topic, and I have to say quite a disturbing one. You know, on the subject, kind of the general subject of privatization, we've been seeing a little bit of that lately here with this recent bailout and stuff. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, I know we're kind of getting off the subject a little bit here, but it's still privatization.
Right. I think there's a tie-in. One thing I'd like to see as an agenda for the country is to change this wording from bailout to change it to handout.
Yeah,
because it's really been a handout, and it's to the top, 1%. It's to the wealthy again, with the idea that it'll trickle down and maybe help the average homeowner. But instead of doing the bailout, instead of helping the homeowners and to have the money go upwards in that way and helping, like, for instance, they put into the bill that finally did get passed, they put in $180 million in tax cuts. Most of those tax cuts, again, are for the wealthy, not for the average person. And when Senator Reid tried to put in a extension for unemployment for 860,000 workers who are unemployed, that didn't go anywhere, and that never got added to the bill. So it's a blatant showing of how the neoconservative or the free market people are more concerned about the wealthy than they are for the average worker.
Well, indeed. And we're going to take a little break here, and we'll be right back.
Listen up. We've got a war zone here today, right in our heartland. And across the USA, these multinational bastards don't use tanks and guns, it's true. But they've declared a war on us. Fight back, it's up to you. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. Going to work could be the death of you and me, but we're not unarmed. Our weapon solidarity, Jim Beals and Karen Silkwood, the list goes on and on. With every year that passes, 60,000 more gone. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. When they boost your copay,
war on the workers.
Don't you know what to say?
War on the workers.
When they talk privatization,
war on the workers.
And cooperation,
war on the workers.
When they call you a team,
war on the workers.
You better learn how to scream.
War on the workers.
Oh, that's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, flexibility.
War on the workers.
Every working stiff can see.
War on the workers.
Now when they poison your water.
War on the workers.
Don't go like lambs to the slaughter.
War on the workers.
And when they foul up the air.
War on the workers.
You gotta show that you care.
War on the workers.
When they talk WTO.
War on the workers.
You best be screaming hell no.
War on the workers.
Oh, education. It's a war on child labor protection. It's a war on the 8-hour day. It's a war on occupational health and safety. It's a war on social security. Now thanks to WTO, GATT, NAFTA, MAI, the IMF, and the World Bank, it's a worldwide war. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Yeah, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time, sisters and brothers, you know it's time right now. I said it's time we started calling the shots.
Okay, folks, that was Ann Feeney, War on the Workers. Well, the reason I played that was because it seems like things have been folding here lately, especially in light of this additional information about this new private army that's been formed here in the United States. It's gives me a lot of concern here and everything. This bailout was quite interesting, and it reminded me a lot of the Patriot Act. I mean, the whole thing about no discussion about alternatives, just this is what needs to be done. It needs to be done now. If you don't support it, you're unpatriotic, more or mm-hmm. less. Yeah. And, it's interesting because there's been an email going around to the effect that, of course, we all know that, and it's well-established fact that a lot of these congressmen were getting calls for them the first time around when the bill failed of over, and also the second time as well, they were getting calls from constituents that were anywhere from 100 to 300 to 1 against passage of this bill. And the first time it was still close. I mean, 12 votes would have shifted the other direction. It would have passed the first time. But then I heard the second time around, there was a bunch of behind-the-scenes tactics, including Barack Obama going and strong-arming in the Congressional Black Caucus. And also, I've heard that, of course, there was a lot of corporate interest going back to focused congressmen who voted against it to their congressional districts and throwing some money around to some of the big employers there and getting them to call and strong-arm them. And then also I heard that some that were still holding out, this Representative Sherman from California, stated that him and some others who were not going to vote for the bill were threatened that somebody in the administration said if this bill doesn't pass that we're going to declare martial law. Have you? Is this conspiracy theory or is this something that has some fact to it?
Well, I mean, I believe there's a fact that that was mentioned to these lawmakers that martial law could be implemented. And I think the fact that we had 3,000 American soldiers for the first time in history deployed on American soil for immediate call-up for civil disturbance if necessary is all connected. Whether there's a grand conspiracy behind it, I don't know, but I kind of lean towards the fact that it's just all part of the same protecting free trade, protecting commerce mm-hmm. at any cost mm-hmm. that we've been experiencing since the beginning of our country practically. But I won't go into the history part of that right now. But one of the things about the handout to AIG and others is that AIG had been giving $10 million in campaign contributions to both Republicans and Democrats evenly over the years. And it turned out that after doing some research, we found out that several of the lawmakers who voted for the AIG bailout, as well as the handout given to Wall Street in the terms of the $700 billion bill, had their own money invested in AIG and a lot of these other companies, some as much as $600,000 to $20 million of their own money invested in these companies that they were handing out money to.
Mm-hmm.
So we have that same issue of the following the money trail leads to the truth usually.
Yes, always follow the money. And of course we know people in powerful positions, whether in corporations or government, they don't collude or conspire, do they? I'm sure this doesn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, snakes don't bite.
Yeah, but anyway, I wanted to read this real quick. This is from Alternets from a person named Naomi Wolf. The 1st Brigade of the 3rd Infantry Division, 3,000 to 4,000 soldiers have been deployed to the United States as of October 1st. Their stated mission is in the form of crowd control. They practice in Iraq, subduing quote-unquote unruly individuals in the management of quote-unquote national security. This person wrote, I'm in Seattle and heard from a brother of one of the soldiers that they are engaged in exercises as we speak. Amy Goodman reported that an Army spokesperson confirmed that they will have access to lethal and non-lethal crowd control technologies and tanks. Tanks. George Bush struck down Posse Comitatus, thus making it legal for military to patrol the U.S. He has also legally established that in the quote-unquote war on terror, the U.S. is at war around the globe, and thus the whole world is a battlefield. Thus the U.S. is also a battlefield under this scenario. He also led change to the 1807 Insurrection Act to give him far broader powers in the event of loosely defined, quote-unquote, insurrection and many other, quote-unquote, conditions he has the power to identify. The Constitution allows the suspension of habeas corpus. Habeas corpus prevents us from being seized by the state and held without trial in the event of an insurrection. Habeas corpus could be suspended. However, with his own army force now, his power to call a group of protesters, that is Bush, call a group of protesters or angry voters insurgents staging an insurrection is strengthened. U.S. Representative Brad Sherman of California said to Congress, captured on C-SPAN and viewable on YouTube at www.youtube.com, that individual members of the House were threatened with martial law within a week if they did not pass this second bailout, or the bailout bill that went through the Congress the second time around. And this is quote here, the only way that that they can pass this bill is by creating a sustaining a panic atmosphere. Many of us were told in private conversations that if we voted against the bill on Monday, that the sky would fall, the market would drop 2,000 or 3,000 points the first day and a couple of thousand on the second day, and a few members were even told there would be martial law in America if we voted no. If this is true and Representative Sherman is not delusional, I ask you to consider that if they are willing to threaten martial law now, it is foolish to assume they will never use that threat again. And why deploy the 1st Brigade? I mean, this is interesting. Now, and in conjunction with the whole Blackwater, the private military and everything, I mean, we're looking at some, and this whole economic uncertainty coming down. I mean, it almost seems like the powers that be currently are expecting something to happen here coming up. It seems like they've been planning this for quite some time. Mm-hmm. You know, this thing with Blackwater makes it even more frightening in conjunction with an actual combat brigade that's being deployed here.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And as I mentioned about the 20,000 that are available on a moment's notice to be called up, you can be sure that George Bush won't hesitate to do that if he feels it's necessary in order to keep the power structure the way it is now.
Well, okay, you know, we've talked about the problem. What are you hoping to accomplish, Dan? I mean, what are you hoping? What can we do as good Americans and outstanding citizens that we are? All of us believe we live in a democracy still. What is it we as average citizens and workers can do to try to prevent this or to change it somehow?
Well, I feel that the only antidote really to organized power in Washington and organized power in Wall Street is the power of organized people at the grassroots. So I think continuing to talk to one another, work together on the issues that are at hand locally, as well as keeping informed of what's going on nationally and globally, and keeping talking to one another, organizing on a local level to be part of what's going on in our state and in our community, as well as trying to be part of what's going on nationally. I think a lot of and talking to other people about it, having conversations and dialogue with people who aren't so much aren't as aware as we are in terms of they don't keep up with the progressive or alternative media and aren't aware of what's really going on. I think that our hope really lies in getting the truth out to as many people as possible. And I'd like to encourage people to go to our website, noprivatearmies.org, and they can keep informed with what's – we're going to have a large demonstration in March or April. Catholic workers have picked the Blackwater site in northwest Illinois as their regional conference site, and they'll be doing a civil disobedience act there in late March or early April.
Okay. Well, that sounds good, and there is hope. They were able to shut down Blackwater out outside San Diego, the community.
Yes.
Was.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen this recent uprising from the grassroots recently about this bailout bill, which did stop it the first time. Now, second time around, it didn't. However, I think more people get angrier. They got to realize that the only way we're ever going to be able to take back our country and our democracy is if we start talking to each other, sharing information to each other.
Exactly.
Organize, agitate, educate, organize. Well, Dan, thank you so much for coming in the Labor Hour today. This is
a
very important subject. I'm so glad that you're dealing with it. You're not too far away from us up in DeKalb, and we wish you the best of luck of getting rid of that evil den of Blackwater up there. We're not afraid to throw around expletives occasionally on the Labor Hour, because we call them as we see them, or at least how we think we see them. And, you know, frankly, I think we've got a lot better track record than a lot of these professional pundits on a lot of these networks. So thanks again for coming in.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
There's been a lot of talk about this next song. This song is not a rebel song. This song is Sunday. Believe the news today. Can't close my eyes and make it go away. How long must we sing this song? How long? Too long. Tonight, we can be as one. Tonight. Broken bottles under children's feet. Bodies trembling. song. How long?
Too long.
Too long. Tonight, we can be as one. Tonight.
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 Sunday.
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 Let's roll it.
Anyone who wants more details on my agenda can find them online. The web address is not very imaginative, but it's easy to remember.
Park.com.
Wipe the tears from your eyes. Wipe your tears away. Wipe your tears away. Wipe your tears away. Wipe your bloodshot eyes.
Sunday,
Sunday. Sunday,
Sunday.
Sunday,
Sunday.
Sunday,
Sunday.